But what we're doing today is we're finishing out our First Things First series, right? And the goal or our focus in this series is this simple idea of priorities, right? How do we set the priorities in our lives? Because I think the thing that we find that our experience of life and how we experience our lives and whether our lives feel like they're heading in a good direction or a less good direction is driven tremendously by the priorities in our life. Because remember that this whole series is really based around this promise from Jesus. Right? We've looked at this a bunch of times. Right? Jesus said that I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And what I've referred to this each week as is what I call the Zoe kind of life. Because that was the Greek word that Jesus used to describe this life. And remember this Zoe kind of life was this God-given life, this eternal life, this reality that we don't have to wait until we die to find a life that's bigger than the life that we see with our own eyes. That Jesus invites us to step into a life in this life that is part of the eternal. That is, gives us more than this world alone can give us. And to experience that, our priorities really matter. So throughout this series, what I've been encouraging each of us to do is kind of look at the priorities we've set in our lives. You know, and we've talked about kind of things that might be too high of a priority in our life. And maybe there's some things we want to kind of pull down so we can connect with others more effectively to be more present. In fact, that was one I really encouraged you to maybe move up your list to actually take this idea of being present seriously. Because we live in a time where staying present in the moment, staying present with ourselves, is more difficult than ever. And if we don't take the time to be present, present with ourselves, with those we love, with God, we're going to miss out. And we're going to have a very hard time having a rich life if we are constantly distracted by other things, if we are constantly looking at screens. You know, and screens come in so many forms. We think of our phones, which are certainly the ones that are most prevalent, but cable news counts too. Right, all those sort of things that distract us from the lives that we're actually living rob us of the lives that we're living. So we want to make this being present a key priority. And then last week, I really kind of pushed on this one that I think we often struggle with. That there are things that we carry with us that hold us back, that slow us down. Right, there are pains from our lives that we just continue to carry with us. Even though the events that created those pains may have passed, it doesn't mean that our experience of those pains have passed. And so we want to deal with those issues. Get help if you need to. See a counselor. Talk to someone. At the same time, there are choices we make in our everyday that slow us down. Right? There are things, you know, the obvious ones are addictions. Alcohol, chemical, whatever it might be. And addictions come in many forms. It can be obsession. It can be work prevailing over everything else. Right? All kinds of things that slow our lives down, keep us from living this rich life that God has for us, that if we'll accept it. Because dangerous habits are not just dangerous to you. And what is okay for one person can be very dangerous for someone else. And we need to be honest with ourselves as we deal with those experiences. Now, that was one thing we talked about, was this idea of our priorities, but we also talked about our priorities need to include not just things for ourselves, that we also recognize that one of our priorities is that God has called each of us to do something, that each of us are uniquely talented or uniquely experienced, uniquely capable to impact the lives of other people. And we want to make sure that a key part of our lives is choosing to make a difference, choosing to show up. And what that looks like for each one of us may not be exactly the same. But a willingness to show up and make a difference in other people's lives is transformative in their lives, but it's also a key part of us being enriched in our own lives. And the thing that I want us to kind of take away with all this is that all these things, and although they seem like very kind of unrelated things, they collectively are the foundations of this life that Jesus describes, this richness of life that Jesus describes, that if we do not tend to all those things, we're never really going to find that kind of life. But here's the thing. I can talk about this till I'm, you know, blue in the face or green in the shirt, right? Whatever the case may be. But if people never take action, nothing ever happens. Because we can so often hear things and go, yeah, that's a really good idea, and never think about it again. And I think even sometimes we do think about it a little bit, but then the idea of getting started seems too much. And that's the thing I want to really focus on today as we finish up. That if we're going to experience this kind of life that Jesus describes, it's a life that we have to choose to step into. We have to recognize that it's a journey, that we don't have to get it perfectly. And the way to actually experience that life is one step at a time. That as we go through all these things, it sounds like I'm asking you to juggle a bunch of balls at the same time. That is not what I'm actually asking you to do. What I've been trying to do throughout this series is identify the places that either may be slowing us down in terms of things that are too high that shouldn't be or aren't high enough, as well as how we make a difference. And we can think about that saying, well, that's kind of a, you know, that's just too many things. But the reality is that this is a multi-part journey. But as I talk about all these things, we can really break it down to kind of two parts. One part is taking care of ourselves, in other words, attending to the things in our lives that we need to address. The other part is choosing to make a difference, that it can be hard sometimes to choose to make a difference. But the way we find this kind of life is not by trying to solve all those things at the same time. The way we find this kind of life that Jesus describes is in simplicity. It sounds like complexity, but the answer is simplicity. You know, in the 12-step world, there's always this kind of phrase that I love, which is, just do the next right thing. That as we talk about life, there can be so many hard choices out there. But in any given moment, odds are there is an obvious next right thing to do. And that is really the path for all of us, is that willingness to take the next step, whatever the next step is. Because the reality is that although life can be complicated, solving certain problems can be complicated, but for most of us, as we try to move into this kind of life that Jesus describes or try to advance further into that kind of life, there is almost always a simple thing that we need to do. And I don't know what it is for you. You know, later I'll share with you a really simple step that I took that really redirected me. But I'm certain that if you stop and think about it for a second, there is something on your mind that you're like, if I could just do this kind of next thing, but I don't know what comes next. And so I can see this one piece, but I don't do the next piece. And the thing is that's the biggest holdup to achieving the kind of life that Jesus describes, is that we never do the first simple thing because we're worried about what the next thing will be. I don't know where to go after that. I don't know what to do next. I don't know what to do after this first thing. And because we can't see the whole thing, we find ourselves never doing anything. Now, to be honest with you, that is something that I have struggled with a great deal in my life. Because I'm a guy who kind of wants to charge forward and kind of, yeah, I want to do the next thing, but I want to do the next 10 things after that too. But then I go, if I don't know what those next 10 things are, what should I do? So there's a verse that I've memorized over the years that actually motivates me, to help keep me on task. And it actually comes from the Old Testament book of Zechariah. And basically the verse is, do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. I think there's a real challenge that we face, and I think this is probably more of a Western culture thing than a global thing, but something that certainly as Americans that we struggle with, we are often drawn towards the hope of certainty. That if I do this, I want to know all the other things that happen. I want to be certain of how all the things are going to go. And we're at a place where we won't do anything until we're certain that it's all going to work out. And what this verse points us to is that don't be held up by seeking the need for certainty. To be willing to do one small thing that advances you one little bit. Because as we look at this verse, if we look at it in context, it really lays out for us this idea. Because if you look at it, it says, don't despise small beginnings. The Lord rejoices to see the work begin. And in context, this verse appears like this. Do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin, to see the plumb line and Zerubbabel's hand. Now, what's a plumb line? It's a string with a rock on it, right? I mean, it's actually more precise than that, but fundamentally, it's a string with a rock on it, right? Something heavy at the end. And all it is used for is to make sure that a wall is vertical, or anything is vertical. So what this verse is saying is that God seems to get excited because a guy is holding a string with something heavy on the end. But it relates to the fact that Zerubbabel was responsible for rebuilding the temple. Now, remember that about a month ago, we were talking about Nehemiah. And this actually relates loosely to Nehemiah. Remember that Nehemiah was charged with rebuilding a wall. And the reason he had to rebuild that wall was because decades earlier, the city had been attacked and razed. And they had torn down the walls and the structures. And part of that was that the temple got torn down. And remember that for these people, that temple was the center of their worship. And so for decades, they had no temple. And Zerubbabel was charged with rebuilding the temple, a project that was far too complex for him to do himself. There was actually only a small group of people there who could do it. It was certainly not enough people to do the job, it would seem. So they have a huge task ahead of them. In fact, for them, this task would take 20 years to get done. But what's God rejoicing over? Not the building of the wall, not the building of the temple, although he would rejoice over those things as well. The simple fact that Zerubbabel had stepped forward and says, I'm going to do the first most basic step. I'm going to identify where the wall goes and how to make it straight. That's how small of a step. And although the people standing there may have been like, oh, this is great. Okay, you marked the wall. Where are we going to get to? The verse is saying, don't despise that. Celebrate that. Look, I'm a guy who has no tattoos. I'm not going to prove it to you, by the way. But I'm a guy with no tattoos, but I constantly think about tattooing that on my arm so I could look at it every day. Because I'm the guy who struggles with small beginnings. I always want to move faster. I always want to do bigger things. And God's saying, slow down. Embrace the small beginnings. Take it one step at a time. That God rejoices when we do that. The fact that we're willing to begin, the fact that we're willing to take a step. And what I want to encourage you with is that there must be something on your mind right now that you're thinking about doing. And it falls into one of the two categories that we've talked about. Either something you need to address in your life that's kind of pulling you off track, or you're feeling drawn to step out and serve someone else. And you don't really know how to do the whole thing. But I guarantee you know how to do something. The call is to do that something. Do that one thing you can think of, and that will begin to move us in the right direction. But the thing that freezes us up is this idea of uncertainty, that we find ourselves wanting to see the whole way clear. And I'm going to tell you, that almost never happens. That if we're talking about life-transforming experiences, our own lives in terms of taking care of ourselves or serving others, we almost never get a super clear picture all the way through. The thing that most of us get is something so subtle, it starts out really easy to ignore. You know, you learn of people not being taken care of, children not being fed, whatever it is for you. And you get this movement inside of your stomach. You're like, I should do something about that. Could I call somebody and figure out how I could get involved? You know, or that you're doing something that each morning you wake up and you go, today I'm not doing that again. And then what happens tomorrow morning? You wake up and you say, today I'm not doing that again. What step can we take to address that? The reality is that it's these subtle movements inside of us, these kind of nudgings. They feel almost external. They feel almost supernatural. And I would argue they are supernatural. It could be a nudging towards something. It could be a discontent with something. And we don't know what we do. We don't know what to do in the long run. So we don't do anything. Because I think uncertainty creates fear. And I'm asking you to move past that fear, because we're afraid we'll take the wrong step. We won't know what to do. And again, I've told you, I wrestle with this a lot. In my life, I have had many times where I felt like I should do something, and I struggled to take that step. So finally, Bonnie stepped in and provided a solution. Shocking, my wife saves me, right? That's a shocking idea. Right? Bonnie gave me this picture. It says, be strong and courageous, for the Lord is with you wherever you go. That comes from the book of Joshua. Now, it's kind of a cool little picture of the lion. I don't feel like a lion most of the time, just, you know. But it actually comes from the book of Joshua, and it's actually Joshua 1:9. And it actually says, this is my command. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now, if you've been reading the Bible or been in church for any length of time, you know who Joshua is. Who is Joshua? He's the guy that came after Moses, right? Sort of thing. That's what we kind of know him as, the guy who came after Moses. But who Joshua really was, Joshua is one of my favorite stories of the Old Testament. Because Joshua found himself in a place that he never expected to be in, completely unprepared for, he thought. Turns out he'd been perfectly prepared. But when Moses led the Israelites kind of out of bondage towards the promised land, this promise of a better life, everyone thought Moses was going to take them all the way in. But they traveled for many, many years. And just as they get close to their destination, Moses dies. And Joshua was prepared to be the guy who supported the guy. Joshua wasn't prepared to be the guy. And suddenly, at the most critical moment in the journey, Joshua was in charge. And he figured that Moses knew where to go. Joshua didn't know where they were supposed to go. He kind of knew generally where they were supposed to go, kind of supposed to go in that direction. But he's the one charged with making the decisions. And as he looks in the direction that God is calling him to go in, there's something in the way. There's a river. And he looks at that river, and it's not really a crossable river. And so he had this kind of thing he had to deal with, that in his connection with God, he felt clear that God was leading him that way. And he felt clear that God would provide a way to get to the other side. But as you look at this river, he had a choice. He could look at this raging river and say, you know what? We're going to sit here on the shore, and as soon as God dries up that river, we'll cross to the other side. Or as soon as maybe God drops a boat into that river for us, then we can go to the other side. He could have sat there waiting for the way to be clear. But what we find in our lives is that generally doesn't work. If we just sit back and wait for the way to become clear, it often doesn't become clear. But God calls us to take steps of faith, one step at a time. And the command that Joshua was given, and the command that Joshua shared with the people who were following him, was this. When you reach the banks of the Jordan River, take a few steps into the river and stop there. So in order for anything to happen, he had to take those first few scary steps. And that's what we all face in our lives. We have to take those first few scary steps. As tempting as it is to say, well, God can do anything, I'll just sit here and he'll fix it. God doesn't seem to do that very often. Because God works through us. That we are created to be in cooperation with God, to be his presence in this world, to make the difference in this world. And so as Joshua commands them to step forward and they step into the water, if you know the story, what happens? The path of the water changes. And suddenly, where there was no way to travel, there now is a way to travel. There is a way to get to the other side. A way I am certain that they would not have found had they not first stepped into the water. And I use this over and over in my own mind, is that as we go forward to do things, as we find ourselves afraid to take the next step, what I see God do in my life all the time is this willingness to take the step that I can. And as I take the step that I can, things change, or I change, and I find a way to go forward. And repeatedly, this is what we see God do in our lives. And there's a really interesting thing to consider here, is that there's a balance being struck as Joshua crosses the river. Right? He doesn't go charging in blindly with no idea about anything. He doesn't know the whole way, but he looks at the step that he can take, and he proceeds cautiously, consciously, intentionally. And that's what we're called to do, to take the step that we can. And that's what I'm asking each of us to do throughout this series, is to look at our lives and take the step that we can, to look at our priorities. What's going on in our lives? What can I do? What do I need to address? Because if we don't do that, we're never going to find the life that we're called to. And I want to give you a sense of kind of how small the steps have to be sometimes. Because as God calls us to go forward, he will almost always ask us to stretch ourselves. But not necessarily right away, but it's the willingness to do what you can that you find it. And for me, that has been a huge factor in my life, right? The life that I live today could not be further from the life I lived not all that long ago. You know, that I went decades without attending church with no real connection to God except when life was going wrong and I'd show up kind of what I call Santa Christ. Oh, God, please fix this. And then when it got fixed, I'd leave again. And then one day it changed for me. And as time went on for me, what ultimately led me to stand here, for good or for bad, sort of thing, is that I'd been involved in the church for a few years, and I'd been an elder of the church, so I was a lay leader at the church. That term had ended, and I felt like I was called to do something beyond just serve inside the church, to do something that went outward. And I had no idea what that was. But I had this kind of niggling to just go talk to the executive pastor. So it was a church of a few hundred people. And so church is large enough that you don't know everyone, you know. So I went to the executive pastor, and his name was Ed. I was like, Ed, I feel like God's asking me to do something. I have no idea what it is. And Ed says, well, you know what? I was just talking to a guy, and he does a prison ministry. He goes into prisons, and they do 12-step meetings inside of prisons. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to deal with prison inmates, and I know nothing about 12 steps. But if he's okay with that, I'll go. And he was okay with it. So I went. And I sat in those meetings inside of prisons. And you kind of get this really stupid attitude. You know, you walk in. Well, I shouldn't say I got this really stupid attitude. That I walk in, I'm like, well, I'm not like these inmates. You know, I've never been incarcerated. I'm not a drug addict. I've got all the answers. I don't. And as I sat there, first learning about the 12 steps, which I had to go look up, sort of thing. And I listened to these people who would seem incredibly different from me. But I listened to them tell their stories, and they weren't as different from me as I'd like to think they were. And that the issues that I could so easily point a finger at because I got to leave when we were done, I'm not saying I did that, but I you know, one could think that. I started realizing that the line of thinking they used to get to the trouble they were in, I had used a lot of times in my own life. And what I found is that as I thought I was going there to be part of a transformative process for other people, transformed me. Because I will tell you, you cannot be exposed to the 12 steps for very long until they start to change you. And then eventually I got to run my own group. You know, I started out in the Florida prison system, state prison system. I served in the county system here. And I actually kind of felt this need to go, well, you know, we're not just going to do the 12 steps anymore. I'm going to do this kind of hybrid 12-step meeting church thing. That we'll kind of do little mini sermons tied to the 12 steps. And I was really afraid I'd lose the guys that were coming. And more guys came. And we started reaching more people. And then ultimately they asked us to go from the minimum security side to also do the medium security side. So what I thought was going to be a small group of men in one part of the prison ultimately came Bonnie and I with men and women in both sections of the prison. And as I carried on, I ultimately felt called to church ministry. And that's the only way I could end up here, And it wasn't until I was actually writing the sermon, when I thought my first step was talking to the executive pastor, that I realized that wasn't my first step. The step that actually changed me most happened years earlier. When I first kind of returned to church, again, I hadn't really gone seriously since I was a kid. And I was filled with anger. I was a guy, I've mentioned that to you before, I was a guy who was loaded with uncontrollable anger. And I had made some really risky stuff, decisions in my business that had not gone very well, that were all my fault. And I walked into that church just hating everyone. And someone invited me to a Saturday morning men's group. And I went in there filled with all my anger and all the things I was mad about. And this group of guys who were mature Christians would listen to me lose my temper and never lose theirs. Listen to me argue over the stupidest things and not argue back. And over time, that transformed me. A group of men willing to put up with me. And you guys have a sense what that's like, right? Group of men willing to put up with me and all my anger and all my lostness and all my blaming other people for the choices I had made. And they changed everything. There was this one guy who was in his 80s, a guy named Dan. Man, Dan, when I see Dan in heaven, who died just a couple years ago, Dan changed my life. And nothing that happened after that would have happened without Dan in my life. And depending on where you are in your life, you may be looking for a Dan, you might be Dan, but you're never going to find out unless you take that first step, unless you do the work that you're called to do. It may be work on yourself for a time, it may be work serving others for a time, but you're never going to find it unless you do it. And the thing I want you all to hear is that when we start out small, we feel like it's going to stay small. But that doesn't seem to be how it works with God. Now, we don't always get to see the big things, but I guarantee you that when you do what God calls you to do, it will lead to something big. I mean, Dan got to see some of the changes in my life, but not all of them. And actually, I can't imagine he would believe them if I told him. But those things happened because of Dan. And there's this promise that we get from the book of Ephesians. As Paul is writing to the people in Ephesus, he writes this. Oops. Did I miss a button? Oh, I'm hitting the wrong button. Sorry. There you go. Now, all glory to God, who is able through his mighty power at work within us to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think. My friends, if you are willing to step out, if you're willing to do what God calls you to do, if you're willing to take that next step, and you don't have to know what it is, I guarantee you, if when I walked into Ed's office, Ed said, you know, this many years in the future, you're going to be in church ministry, I would have walked out of Ed's office. Because that was never the plan for my life at that point. That was never what I wanted. I thought that you need to be willing to trust that that next step that you take will make all the difference in someone's life. And will make all the difference in your life. And what I'm asking you to do is that as you go forward into your life, do something very simple. Walk as far as you can see. And when you reach that point, you will see further. But if you never take that first step, you're never going to find it. And it all begins with looking at the priorities we set in our lives and be willing to shuffle them in a way that makes a difference.